I heard the that ad again for the Bible Stick, which is a audio version of the New Testament. That's this company that's selling it wants you to spend $25 to deliver a 25-cent item to America's military troops. Kirk, I would ask you, what's the purpose of a weapon?
Kill.
And a gun manufactured by the military, deployed in the hands of a an individual in the military. What is the sole purpose of that weapon?
It becomes a killing machine to kill people.
Yeah.
They're not hunting.
Yeah, they're not hunting.
Hunting animals, they're going over to kill people.
They're trained to kill, aren't they?
Absolutely.
They're trained to follow orders.
Follow orders to the death.
And to kill.
Right.
Yeah, even Tony Blair wanted to take out Saddam Hussein, wanted to kill him. So we had troops that were equipped with weapons to kill and were trained to follow orders to do as the leaders had demanded, which was to kill.
Right.
Hmm.
No mistaking it.
No mistaking it at all. Do you think that Yahweh finds is in love with the killers?
He says he hates them.
Yeah. In fact, we're just going to find that he hates them. Hates them. Okay, so Yahweh has six things that he hates. The Hebrew word is sane. It means to abhor, detest, loathe, and consider adversarial. This ain't love. This is the antithesis of love. Abhors, detests, loathes, considers adversarial. Primary definition of sane is to hate. And seven things that are an abomination, tawaba, disgusting and unethical. Rituals which are abhorrent, abominable, detestable, and idolatrous, unethical to his soul. Now, his soul here, because I've jumped in the middle of a conversation, his soul isn't Yahweh's soul. It's the soul of the perpetrator. And the discussions of Proverbs 6, 1 through 15 discuss the interactions and the cause and consequence of perpetrators. So these are seven things that Yahweh hates and that are disgusting, an abomination to one's soul.
I wasn't sure about that last night when I was translating, and I thought maybe he was just talking about his inner being.
So mm-hmm.
He's talking about the people he's the soul of the people he's talking about, right?
Yeah, he's talking about the soul of the people that he is discussing here.
Okay.
And soul means inner character, consciousness,
yeah.
Persona, character.
Right. Okay, I'm with you now.
Okay, so behold, presently. Now at this time, pay attention. There are six things Yahweh hates. Yahweh abhors, detests, and loathes. Yahweh considers adversarial. And seven are an abomination to his soul, are disgusting and unethical rituals, abhorrent, abominable, detestable, and idolatrous, unethical to his soul. Okay, so what are the six things? Now, it's interesting. This is a proverb, which is a word picture, which we're going to find is that there are six specific aspects of the human persona, the way that humanity was created, that God's going to call out systematically. Six. Well, six being the number of man, and there's six aspects of our nature that he is calling out, all of which he says he hates. And it's not the part of the human anatomy, because he's going to speak of eyes, tongues, hands, hearts. Then he goes to feet. And lastly, at the sixth, is breath. And it's not which is really a synonym for soul. It's not the human anatomy that he hates, because he conceived all of these things. It's the improper use of them.
Right.
Okay, so it's the improper use. Now, if we're going to be like God, if we want to know God, if we want to act like God, if we want to emulate what God's like, then we too need not only to hate as he hates, but we need to know what to hate, and here he is telling us what he hates. So we ought to acknowledge that these are the proper things to despise, and we ourselves should abhor them. Follow me on that?
Absolutely.
So this is an important thing. If you're doing any of these things, you are adversarial and abhorrent to your Heavenly Father, to the Creator of the universe. So you don't want to be doing these things, and to be like God, to be accepted by God, you ought to hate the same things He hates. So it's a double-edged sword here. And there's seven things with an abomination. So eyes, tongue, hands, heart, feet, and then soul, which is expelled as one's breath. So let's look at the misuse of these things. One, haughty eyes and observations, including a rebellious perspective. Rum ain. There's nothing wrong with eyes. Ain is eyes. It means to observe, to provide an appearance, to form a perspective. So ain is a positive term. But when aim is modified by rum, you got a problem. This is a self-exalting attitude or public display, a defiant view, a proud outward appearance, arrogant eyes, an individually improper perspective or understanding, in essence, an egotistical attitude whereby one claims or projects superiority over others by way of defiant and self-aggrandizing observations, exalting oneself improperly. Okay, that's the first thing that God says that He hates. Now, all seven of these things are an abomination to our soul. But they're one of the six things that God says He hates. Why do you think God hates haughty eyes and observations, including a rebellious perspective?
Well, He hates arrogance, number one, over and over and over again. And that's the nature of the church. That's the nature of the military, is the nature of governments. They have a view of themselves as proud and boastful. They think they're something.
Yeah, in fact, and let's look at the church. Let's look at the church. You walk into a church, it's got these elevated and decorated ceilings. Even before you walk in, you see the height of it. You raise your eyes, you see the spire and the steeple and the cross, and then all of the uplifting architecture, and inside the soaring ceilings, all decorated and gilded. It doesn't want that.
It's a design plan, too. I mean, if you study art.
Yeah, it's a design plan. Yeah, it's part of the design plan. What he doesn't want is somebody who is pretending to be above anybody else.
Right. Nobody's supposed to be called Father. Nobody.
Right. So, you know, there's two forms of influence in our world. It's one is called legitimate. The other is called earned. Legitimate is the kind of thing that he hates. That would be the Pope has control over the cardinals. The cardinals have absolute dictatorial control over the bishops. The bishops have dictatorial control over the priests. Moving on down. In the military, it's generals or admirals over, and depends on the branch, you know, over colonels or captains and over lieutenants, over enlisted personnel.
Right. Very good.
Assigned control mechanisms. In the U.S. government, the president is over senators, or kind of over congressmen, or over states, legislative bodies, and goes on down. You know, and in fact, there's even a ranking in government, just as there's a ranking and a numerical ranking in the military. You know, you're an 06 as a general. You know, for example, you're an E3 as a private first class, or, you know, that kind of thing, an enlisted man. All rankings, even in business, there are rankings, although those rankings in business are almost always earned. God's not into that. His idea is that His relationship is one-on-one with us, and anyone who claims to be an intermediary, who claims to be in a superior position, is wrong.
Yeah. Ace one, we're all sixes.
Right. Yeah. He's one. We're all sixes. And there are none of us that are should be ever considered superior to anyone else.
Right.
Our only cause for seeing ourselves as being superior is the fact that we're in the first family, being part of the first family. But then 100% of our superiority is directly attributable to our Heavenly Father, the Father of the Covenant. But anyone who claims superiority is hated by God. Okay, so that'd be a lot of people. That'd be a lot of people. You run for a public office. You're in politics. Aren't you claiming to be, you know, to run for something that is to govern or to preside over?
Right.
To legislate over? That's not his thing. That's why he doesn't like politics. The military is the same thing. You join the military, you try to gain authority. So God doesn't like that. And it's because he doesn't want people dictating to other people. It's because he's all for a one-on-one relationship, father to son.
Okay, is there a plan?
You know, I was talking with my youngest son last night, and if my youngest son were to be asked about our relationship, I think he would say this: my father is my best friend. I'm not over my son. I don't ever project myself as being superior to my son. In fact, I would, at any moment of any day, at any time, lower myself to lift up my son. I want my son to be greater than I am. And so, we are friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the exact way that Yahweh wants it to be. I think that's how he views his relationship with us, even. That he does not see himself as a lord over us, but instead as us as his children, that he has lifted up to the point that we become like him in every way, able to walk hand in hand with him. So the first thing is no hierarchy, no delusions of grandeur. Do you know somebody that claimed to be uniquely appointed by God, where no one else mattered, that he alone was given 99% of the world, exclusive over 99% of the world, and appointed by God in this kind of an ethical claim?
Easy test question. That was Paul.
That was Paul, wasn't it? You know, another person that made the same claim would be Rabbi Akiva.
Yes.
Another person that made this claim, although on behalf of Allah, who is modeled after Satan, would be Muhammad.
Mm-hmm. Hitler? Mao?
Yeah. So, the next is, so we have haughty eyes. The second is a deceptive tongue. Shakur Lashon. A false and misleading statements. Rhetoric which leads to mistaken beliefs. Irrational propositions, vain and useless claims, speeches comprised of lies which deceive and betray, a witness providing false hope which disappoints and injures, fraudulent testimony. So the first is claiming to be someone special, claiming to have been appointed over others. You know, what did God have to say when the Israelites wanted a king over them?
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't choose to have somebody over you. Don't do it. Yeah. And so don't choose to have a father over you, a priest over you, a general over you, a politician, a president. I mean, don't choose to have any of these people over you. Don't respect human authority. So that's the first. And the second is, what are those authorities going to do? They're going to lie.
Yeah.
And so he hates the lies. There's nothing wrong with the tongue, just as there's nothing wrong with the eyes, but there's something wrong with a deceptive tongue.
Yeah.
With false and misleading statements, with rhetoric which leads to mistaken beliefs. If you were to classify the individuals in human history that would most exemplify this which God hates, who would be first on your list?
Well, Paul to begin with.
Yeah, Paul.
I mean, you can go all the way back to Satan starting out, but I mean, Paul, mm-hmm. you know, from...
You hey, by the way, speaking of Satan, mm-hmm. who had, who uplifted eyes? Who had visions of grandeur?
He certainly did.
Satan did, didn't he?
My throne above yours.
Yeah. Satan had these visions of grandeur. And Satan is the adversary with a deceptive tongue. In fact, when he slithered, was allowed to slither into the garden and corrupt Yahweh's testimony to take something Yahweh said out of context to mislead, wasn't his speech deceptive?
Yeah, it was twisted words.
Yeah. So God hates twisted, deceptive, misleading words because they lead people away from him. They lead them astray. They make it more difficult for people to know and understand the truth. And so he hates it. You know what's interesting, though, is God allowed that which he hated. Didn't he have to allow Satan to slither into the garden?
Or
Satan to get in there?
You can't have volition without choice, can you?
Right. And didn't Yahweh allow Satan to twist his testimony, to corrupt his testimony?
He did.
He did. It's not to say that he likes it.
No.
Sometimes you have to do things that you don't like.
He's fair.
To be fair. Yep. So the second thing on the list is a deceptive tongue. Someone who provides fraudulent testimony. Rabbi Akiva comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Maimonides.
Maimonides. Paul. Muhammad. All come to mind. Certainly Mao and Lenin and Stalin and Hitler in today's more modern world are all exemplars of deceptive tongues. The next is that, number three, hands that shed innocent blood. Eyes, tongue, hands. But not just hands. Oh, a brother likes hands. Yes. But not hands that shed innocent blood.
All right.
Acts which cause the spilling and pouring out of the blood of those not proven guilty, which is not in self-defense. When America uses its drones to kill, have they proven any of those people guilty of a crime worthy of death?
They've never had a chance to go to court. Or
never indicted any of them, never took any of them to court, never provided any evidence against any of them. That's the shedding of blood in a non-self-defense mode. When America bombed that hospital in Afghanistan, would that be the shedding of innocent blood?
Absolutely, it was.
When we drop our bombs from the sky in Syria and Iraq, are we shedding the blood of those who we have not proven guilty?
Yeah. Who gave you the right to do it, even if they are guilty?
Right. Right. Yeah. Who gave you the right? Even if they were guilty, who gave you the right to do it?
Who said you could steal their land? Who said you could occupy their soil?
What made us the decider of life and death?
Yeah.
Really?
That's what...
Are we so high and mighty? Elevated eyes. Are we so honest and truthful, deceitful tongues, that we have think ourselves empowered to have the right to determine life and death?
And when you bring it up to someone, look at the stupid arguments they come up with. I mean, they never say we have the right. They just say, well, we have to defend whatever. I mean, I beg your pardon? I mean, how am I threatened because Assad or whoever is doing his thing?
Or
you don't have to like it. Right. You don't have to like a dictator in South America. Argentina is a horrible place in different times under different dictators. And sure.
But how is the Islamic State? How is the Islamic State a threat to you in Northern California?
Well, it's not. So it's not. It's an invalid argument.
Yeah. How is Assad? How is Saddam Hussein a threat to you or to your family? How is Muammar Gaddafi a threat to you and your family? And so what Yahweh was saying is, those who shed innocent blood, those who act and kill, and when it's not self-defense, he hates that. You know, it was interesting that America actually had more boots on the ground in Syria. We accompanied the Peshmerga, which means to embrace death, the Kurdish jihadists. And we went on a raid of a Islamic State prison to release Peshmerga Kurdish jihadists. That's who we released from a Islamic State prison. We didn't go and try to release the little girls who were being gang raped and sold as slaves.
No.
Not in Syria, not in Nigeria. But we'll go and we'll an American was killed, by the way, on this raid. That we will sacrifice American lives to release prisoners who are engaged in religious war, sectarian war.
And we'll kick a man out of the army who complains about the horrible things going on to little children in Afghanistan.
How do we finally bring World War II to a close in the Pacific?
We just blew everybody up.
We dropped incendiary bombs.
All over innocent people in Tokyo.
50 nights in a row over the largest cities in Japan, taking the lives by burning women and children and old men to death.
Yeah, we did the same thing in Europe. In the European theater, I wiped out Dresden, you name it, all the way to...
So, was God celebrating our great victory, or was he saying, I hate that? Yeah, look at Germany. We firebombed Dresden.
Yeah.
So, are American veterans who flew those bombers firebombing Dresden, burning an entire city of women and children alive, heroes, or... from God's point of view, are they hated?
They're killers.
They're killers. As are those that ordered them to kill.
Mm-hmm. Down even worse.
Yeah.
Because they came up with the plan.
Absolutely. When Sherman marched to the sea and made the fighting of the Civil War so hellish for the Southerners. And he killed anyone who would oppose him, even if they were innocent. He wasn't a hero, not in God's eyes. He's hated. So visions of grandeur, a deceptive tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. Number four. That's, by the way, the reason that militaries, a protected U.S. military, dehumanize whoever the government has said are your next foe.
Yeah, well, otherwise you couldn't take it.
Right, right. Yeah, they're dehumanized. The next is a heart which devises and writes troublesome, idolatrous, unjust, false, and evil plans. The heart is, just like the hands are demonstrative of our actions. The eyes are demonstrative of our vision and perspective. Our tongue is demonstrative of our speech, whether it's truthful or not. And here the next is the heart. The heart is the place from which our attitude emerges, from which our desires flow, which governs our ambitions, right?
Right, it's the seat of our thought, our mind, emotions. Sure.
Right, yeah. Yeah. From a Western mindset, we have a difficult time associating heart with mindset. We think of the heart as an emotional place, but in the ancient Hebrew, leb was the place from which your core perspective, your attitudes about everything would emerge. It was when you came through your eyes to see something and thus be aware of it, and then through your mind to make the connections so that you understood it. By the time that you understood something and then acted upon it, determined whether it was good or bad, then it was considered part of your heart.
Yeah, and your being.
The that you took it to heart once you really understood and processed and acted upon something. That's why Yahweh is going to write his Torah on our hearts. It's the place from which you integrate it into the totality of your being.
That's a good old saying, you know, taking it to heart.
Yeah, so that's what he's speaking of here. Taking it to heart. So someone that at the very core of their being devises or writes a plan which is troublesome, which is false, which is evil.
Mm-hmm.
And here the device is charash, which means to engrave or to inscribe. This would be someone who writes a letter, for example, who pretends to write doctrine.
Yeah. Well, I wrote it and scratch out a plan and But also, when I wrote in parentheses, see Syria and WikiLeaks.
Yeah. Exactly.
My God.
Yeah, exactly. But it's what's interesting, it also means to conceal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the U.S. government wants to fine a Wall Streeter $50 million for their observation of one of their secret internal documents at the Fed. You know, the U.S. wants to conceal its own behavior, its own ambitions. But Americans are expressing a part of this verb of charash by remaining silent, of failing to speak out against the evil that is lurking in their midst. And so a heart which fails to respond, which remains silent, a heart which conceals things that are evil, a heart which seeks to inscribe a troublesome and false message, that which is clandestine and conspiratorial in scheme, which causes, and this is really interesting, as you really hone down on the meaning of these words, this is a heart which devises schemes that cause some people to be silent and to silence others, but as well as causing many to be deaf. It's really deaf and dumb. Dumb, not in the sense of being stupid, but dumb in the sense of not being able to speak or being unwilling to speak and being deaf and not hearing. And isn't political correctness, isn't even Pauline Christianity,
an
edict doctrine that have been inscribed to cause people to cease to hear that which is important, particularly Yahweh's Torah, and to cease to speak out against this terrible dumbing down of society.
And the Catholics did it by using Latin and not allowing anyone to have a book.
Yeah, and of torturing anyone as a heretic that would speak out. So they precluded people from speaking out, like political correctness. If you violate political correctness, you're publicly crucified. You'll lose your job. You'll lose your reputation. You're humiliated. So these are doctrines that have been inscribed for the sole purpose to shut people up. And so people aren't even willing to hear, to process information that is valuable to them.
And in a country that was founded so-called on free speech and had libraries in every town, my God, how far we've come.
Yeah. I think Thomas Jefferson had 6,000 books in his library. You know, a man who found books essential to him. And look what's happened to us. Yeah, we're awash in information. But we've lost the ability to process it. We've lost the ability to expose and condemn that which is counterproductive.
I think it's also interest. They just don't care.
Right. You know, when you look at Pauline Christianity, it's definitely a plan. It's definitely a scheme.
Right.
Which is absolutely and unequivocally false. It's idolatrous. It's troublesome. It's evil. And yet, how few people know it? And yet God says, I hate it.
Well, when you translate it out of those earliest documents, it's so easy to see. And then you can see how much has been changed by constant editing for the last 2,000 years. It's amazing.
Yeah.
how they
look at the fanciful book called Enoch.
Yeah.
You know, inscribed to mislead. Wrongfully attributed to someone. You look at the Catholic Church canon, church law.
Sure.
Inscribed, false, unjust, evil. You look at the Christian New Testament with half of its inscriptions engraved from the pen of Paul.
While we were talking, I was looking up the 26 translations I have of these translations. And just to make a point, though, in verse 16, all 26 say God hates. God
mm-hmm.
detestable. God hates it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so and abhors it.
Yeah.
Now, they have yes. to that section, but of course you destroy the Old Testament, so-called, you destroy the Torah, and say mm-hmm. this is the new plan, then I guess you can avoid that. But
right.
Sorry, they translated it correctly.
Yeah, and by the way, Tohu, abomination, they get right too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, behold presently these six things. Now, they don't get Yahweh right.
No.
But Yahweh right. hates, right. and seven are an abomination to a soul. I don't think there's any of those that any translation gets wrong. Visions of grandeur, haughty eyes, a rebellious perspective, they get all of that wrong. They get eyes right, but they have uplifted eyes. God's got no problem with an uplifted eye if you're looking at him. His whole alphabet is based on that. His whole covenant proposition is based upon that. And then so it's visions of grandeur. Deceptive tongues, you've got no problem with speech, with tongue, but not when you're using it to deceive. You've got no issue with our hands. He gave us hands. Beautiful design, but not when they're used to shed innocent blood.
No.
He designed our heart to be the core of our body, to take what he has to say to heart, but not when hearts devise schemes, cunning designs, which are unjust, false, evil, and troublesome. There isn't a Hebrew lexicon that properly writes aeon. They instead translate it aven, not recognizing, of course, that there is no V amongst the Hebrew alphabet, nor any sound that is a V. And so the Masoretes and their vocalizations have sought to change the vocabulary in this regard on the word that describes them. Egotistical, invalid, unreliable, corrupt, harmful, relationally damaging, untrue, fraudulent, religious, a word that is indistinguishable from awone. You know what awone is, and as it's used in the Torah? It's the most prominent Egyptian religious center.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? And so this word for evil is the word used to describe the place from which the Egyptian religion flows. So God encapsulates and associates evil with religion. So religious writings, a heart which devises plans based upon religious writings.
I'd scratch out a plan, use power for improper purpose. Yeah. Anywhere you cut it, anywhere you look, yeah.
The next is feet. Think God's got anything against feet?
No, otherwise he wouldn't have to come walk with me.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the one of the animals without feet, a snake, he specifically describes as that being a limitation. You've got to slither on your belly. So having feet enables you to stand upright, enables you to have a form of locomotion, to move from one place to another, to discover, to go out and do things, to go one way or another. You know, whichever way your feet are pointed, that's the way you're going. So you got nothing against feet. regel, but he does when they rashly and impetuously run to or fro, darting about to approach that which is evil. So it's not just feet which move towards evil. He has two modifiers here. One is acting rashly, hurriedly, foolishly. This is ma'ar. Without thinking, motivated by either fear or false hope, impulsively, recklessly, hastening to one's demise. It's indistinguishable from a mahar, which means eager to profess allegiance or consent, ready to pay a price to receive acceptance, obtaining that which does not exist in exchange for money. So when your footsteps cause you out of fear, without thinking, out of false hope, to hasten to one's demise, to give up your earnings, to be accepted, you're being religious.
The thing is,
how do you view this as anything other than acquiescing either to the political structure or the religious structure of society?
Well, religious is easy, but I see it also as patriotism, where we all rally around the flag at a moment's notice and rush out.
Pay our taxes to support our military. So, but God is saying that we do, when it's done foolishly without thinking, when doing so is either motivated by false hope or fear, then that's when he particularly hates it. And so then the next thing he talks about is roots, which is to run to and fro, darting about, intensely chasing after, causing others to run away. Jacob was named Jacob because he dug in his heels. He walked, heel to toe, that's straight ahead, without swerving. You know, constantly, it says it's a narrow, straight path that leads to life. And if you veer to one side or another, if you dart to and fro, you're not on that path.
No.
Fair. And we're so scattered, running from this to that to the other thing in life and as countries and, religious affairs. And isn't faith just a rash, foolish, unthinking reaction motivated either out of fear of hell or false hope in heaven?
Yeah, you're kind of left with, you just got to believe everything will, or hope that everything will come out okay instead of knowing what he... Why would he tell you all these things are going to happen precisely, and then you run around saying, I guess all these things just have to happen or nothing?
Yeah. I think if it wasn't for Mahar, either fear of being tortured in hell or hope that you and your loved ones will end up together in heaven after death, religious couldn't be sold, that it wouldn't fool anyone. It's the reason that people accept it without thinking is either fear or false hope. And how many religions, I drove by a Mormon church, and every parking spot was filled the other day. And, in there, they're demanding that everyone that's there give up 10% of their gross. The Catholic Church for centuries had indulgences where you gave up your money, you could buy favor.
Oh, yeah, you have to pay for them to pray for your departed ones and all that sort of thing, too. Yeah.
Right. The Christian churches, you're not going to find many that don't pass around a collection plate, that don't solicit your money.
One way or another.
Yeah. One way or another. So feet which rashly, foolishly, without thinking, motivated by either fear or false hope, impulsively and recklessly, hastening to one's demise, are ever ready to profess an allegiance or consent, ready to pay the price to receive acceptance, darting about to and fro to approach that which is ra'ah, objectionable, wicked, wrong, depraved, perverse, miserable, that which is harmful and essentially bad, causing injury and suffering. Christianity is bad. It's depraved. It's perverse. It's objectionable. Islam is miserable and harmful, injurious, causing suffering. Judaism, the same things can be said of Judaism. It's objectionable to God. So is socialist secular humanism. And yet, what percentage of the world's people rush headlong, hurriedly and foolishly without thinking, motivated either by fear or false hope, towards one or another of these things?
99.9%.
Yeah, I would think it's that high.
Once claimed by Paul.
Yep. And so it's a kind of the zombie mentality. You know, without thinking, they just go off and do things which are self-destructive. In the zombie movies, they're always without thinking, rashly, hastening one's demise.
And violent.
Yeah. By violently seeking to do that which is impulsive.
And Yahweh said all you had to do is stay on the path. He's talking about the path that goes through Passover. It's not a hard path.
Yeah. You know, but if you look at the opposite of each of these things, you know, if you use your eyes to look down at what he had to say, to examine his Torah instructions, if you use your tongue to communicate what he has conveyed to us, if you use your hands to protect the innocent as opposed to kill them, if you, from your heart, you write things that are just and right and trustworthy based upon Yahweh's guidance, and if you use your feet to thoughtfully, to courageously, to appropriately walk to him, thinking your way through that process on the path that he has provided, the opposite of what God hating that, he loves it. You know, there's a corollary here. God hates these things, but he loves the corollary.
Mm-hmm.
So now we move from feet to this next one is because it's six, it has to be a thing. You know, we've had feet and hands and hearts and tongues and eyes. We have to have another thing. And the Hebrew word puach, which is primarily translated breath, breathing, blowing. The Hebrew word nefesh, its primary meaning isn't actually soul, it's breath.
Yeah.
Air. Yeah. The air that comes out from us. You know, when, like, our speech right now, it is comprised entirely of air coming out from us. Our breath is what is causing these words to resonate. And so what he's talking about is our soul as it breathes out utterances. Now, Yahweh rather likes our soul. Gave us a soul. Wants us to value our soul. He values it. Mm-hmm. And so it is, again, modified. And this, our breath, our soul, you know, which is emerging through us as the spoken word, is hated by God when it is kazab. Kazab would be dishonest religious speeches, a blowhard testifying loudly and formally, zealously proclaiming a deceptive delusion, which is contrary to reality. Puach Gazab would be a maligning soul whose breath utters sedition. That's rebellion against God. Breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods. Well, who's the poster child for that?
Paul again.
Yeah, you get an A-plus in your paper.
And all the people who followed him since.
Yeah, and I mean, we see Paul now in so many of these things because it's so obvious, but this is a literal depiction of Paul, a maligning soul whose breath utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony which incites the deluded to worship false gods.
Yeah. Well, Tony Blair fits in there too.
Yeah. Puach Kazab, he who breathes out dishonest religious speeches, a blowhard, testifying loudly and formally, zealously proclaiming a deceptive delusion which is contrary to reality. Contemptuous, condescending, derisive, mocking, slandering, and insulting while delusionally claiming to be a valid witness, blasting away and enraged, demanding that others accept and submit to his contradictions and errant testimony regarding pagan gods, even if he is easily proven to be a liar, and that the religious deceptions he is promoting cause the victim to be wrong. Wow.
Wow, indeed.
If you don't see the totality of Pauline Christianity in that, then you just aren't using your brain. Your eyes are focused on the wrong thing. And so hopefully on Monday, Kirk will return to these instructions.